Hello and welcome to Lunch with Leon, one of my regular podcasts which brings, I hope, interesting news, interesting stories and interesting people from around the world. Lunch with Leon is a Binswood Media production. We'd very much like to hear from you. We hope you're enjoying it. You can find us and more at itthub.net. And my guests today, I'm very pleased to have here on Lunch with Leon, I've got Isbrand Ho, who's the Managing Director of BYD Europe. And also together with us today, the Managing Director of BYD UK, my old friend Frank Thorpe. So Frank and Isbrand, thanks really very much for joining us. We call this Lunch with Leon. It's as if we're having lunch together, but of course we're not because we're all in our own homes. So what did you have for your lunch today, Isbrand?
Well, very good, Leon. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure for me to be here. Just a simple salad, chicken salad. You know, in these days of coping up at home, it's best that I keep my diet light, if you know what I mean.
I'm in the same position as you. Frank, how about you? Have you put on any weight?
Yeah, absolutely, Leon. And I'm enjoying home cooking hugely and, all the better for it.
Yeah, in fact, I'm enjoying home warming up, which is the most... is the most I'm able to do. So we're at something like in the UK, day 105, day 106 of the lockdown. That's the reason why we're not doing this all together. One of the things I just want to explore with you is about the UK market and the worldwide market. We've spent all of our careers trying to get people to travel on public transport. Now in the UK, the government is telling people to do the opposite. I just wonder whether you thought that passenger volumes in the UK and across the world, do you think they've been permanently damaged as a result of all this?
Yeah, so I'll jump in on the UK, Leon. And I think it's interesting, really, because I think you've got to look at this, you know, not just through the sort of viewpoint of the current crisis. And I think if we look at public transport in the UK pre the crisis, you know, it had some challenges anyway. So passenger numbers were declining. And I think there was a real issue, challenge of a bit of a two-tier public transport system in the UK. You know, I think certain communities, people were getting left behind by the provision of public transport. So, you know, you could see examples in the UK of very high quality, zero emission, latest ticketing and information. And then you could also see examples where it wasn't so good. I think what the crisis has done has given us the opportunity to look at the whole public transport system and network. And I think the challenges facing us going forward are going to be, in the first instance, how do we provide capacity with the public health requirements that are necessary? So that's an immediate challenge. But I think the opportunity is, how do we do two things? How do we emerge from this providing healthier, better public transport, but also without leaving anyone behind? I think there is a huge opportunity to look at the country as a whole and say, what is the best solution for the country as a whole? How do we look at those markets, those areas where the current model of providing commercial and tendered bus services and train services, etc.? How do we look at that model and say, what is the way of ensuring that everybody gets a high quality public transport provision? And I think that's going to be the challenge. I think if we can rise to that challenge, I think passenger numbers can re-emerge better, higher than they ever have been before. But we have to provide the right mix, the right quality, and it needs to be for everybody.
I think I echo what Frank just said. And that was very well said. I think the volume will come back. It's suffering right now. We have some, you know, some numbers that is really eye popping at this time right now. But I think the traffic will come back. However, as a public transport operator, they need to be more responsible for their drivers, for the passengers. So whether it's additional space, a different time schedule, or whatnot. And this is something that we need to all together look at. But more importantly, countries and cities in particular are committed to the Paris Summit, which is the reduction of the CO2, as well as keeping the temperature increase to less than 2 degrees. Now, you know, in the midst of all this COVID-19, with the political instability right now, you know, people seem to have forgotten about what was pledged in 2015. I think we need to stay focused and continuously reminding the politicians, the public transport authorities about these commitments. And I think electric vehicles, really, is the solution to achieving that. Now, of course, now Frank touched on that earlier. There are things that we need to look at. There are opportunities to providing a better bus, a cleaner bus. What would that be? We are in the midst of discussion right now. Whether it's some germ-killing device on the bus to zap out the viruses, if any, whether it's distancing of the seats and all that. Okay, so this is something that as a bus operator and as a bus manufacturer, we need to work together to really combat the fear of getting on the buses again. I mean, today, I think the biggest problem is the economy, isn't it? I mean, if you have people who are unemployed, they probably don't need to take the bus. So we need to make sure that the economy has a healthy and stable recovery, then providing the transport that people feel safe to step onto, I think the traffic will come back.
So you're both very optimistic about returning to volumes, but some of this market's gone permanently, hasn't it? The people who are working from home more, people who are doing their online shopping, the people who won't have jobs anymore. Surely some of that market's gone for good, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, Leon. But what that says to me that you've then got to develop a different market. So how do we then address what has probably been the real issue even before the crisis has led to the changes you've just described? And the real issue is, how do you stop people actually buying cars and leaving them parked on their driveways for 80% of their time? So I think the challenge for public transport is, how do we attract people not to own a car and use our public transport services? Now, if it is that it's not necessarily to go to work, but is for their leisure activities, or is to go to the restaurants or the cinemas or whatever it is that they're going to use it for, I'm quite happy about that. I don't mind what market it is I'm serving, but I just think we need to ensure that we provide a public transport system that competes on quality, cost, and accessibility with the private car. It's always been the challenge for me.
Yeah, I can't help. You must have seen it too. Some of the temporary socially distancing measures that I've seen on public transport looks like a crime scene. I've never seen so much yellow and black tape. And I have to say that there's a positive message here, isn't there? There's a positive message about travelling in more comfort, travelling safely, travelling conveniently. And I hope that operators will be talking up the message in a positive way.
Well, it's interesting for me, Leon, because we're just coming to the end of delivering the National Express vehicles for Birmingham. And when I look at those vehicles, the standard and specification of the interior and the safety features and all of the things the vehicle has, you know, air conditioning, Wi-Fi, USBs, leather seats, really high quality materials, flooring, etc. I get on the thing and I think, you know what, this is a better solution than sitting in a car in traffic for me. And I think it's about driving quality, driving the right transport in the right place at the right price as well. You know, I think it needs to be affordable. And if that requires subsidy support, well, that's the conversations we have to have. But it's all about quality for me. And I think it always has been. You know, Leon, when you ran London, you know, London thrived on the quality of its services.
So, Frank, do assure me, when I'm on one of your buses and I plug my mobile phone into that USB socket, you're giving me your electricity, aren't you? You're not sucking the electricity out of my phone to make your bus go further.
How did Leon find out about the little trick?
I thought so. So Isbrand, you've also been very active during all this because a lot of our PPE is made in China anyway, and we had some supply problems at the start of this. So you've been very active on PPE, haven't you?
Well, BYD started, we will say this is an accidental journey on this PPE path. But fortunately that we did, and we were able to help a lot of people. We started this PPE journey by providing enough masks, hand sanitizers, and even some of these infrared thermometers for our own factories. With 250,000 people working at BYD, it is important that we take care of our staff. And if you just look at the number of staff, 250,000, multiply that by 2 masks a day, that's 500,000 of masks. That's how we started our journey, Leon. We want to provide the masks for the employee that we have. And then the provincial government found out about it, and they want us to help them. The central government, and so on and so forth. And later on, as early as March of this year, we were contacted by different region and country, for example, Italy and France, and asking us whether we are able to supply masks to them. And so far, I'm very happy to report to you, Leon, that we have been able to ship, you know, multiple millions of masks to countries like France, Italy, the UK, Hungary. And we're very happy that we're able to participate in a very participatory manner in helping the people who are in the front line, the people who are affected by this. And the mandate from the chairman is very simple. We help the country first. We do not want to make profit from the masks. And this is very important to us. And I think we have successfully achieving that.
So, Isbrand, when I've traveled with you in various parts of Asia, I can't fail to observe, of course, that wearing face masks is much more normal in China and in other places in the Far East. Do you think that as a result of this, face masks are now going to be more normal for people in Europe and in the West?
Well, I think the habit of wearing face masks, it goes back a long way because of the congestion, because of the number of people, the density of the population. So countries, for example, like Japan, China, Korea, people are used to wearing masks in these subways or very congested bus systems. Here in Europe, because people normally are more spaced out, they have more space in between them. So wearing masks, it's not been a norm. And I've talked to some of the Dutch colleagues here. They think that the people who wear masks are the people who are sick. If you're healthy, you should not be wearing masks. However, I think that is changing, Leon. I drove from the Netherlands through Germany to Hungary this last weekend. And I've noticed the difference in each of the countries. Netherlands is a little bit cavalier about the mask wearing. Whereas in Germany, it's strictly observed at the restaurants, at the petrol stops, at the hotel check-ins. They demand that you have your masks on. Even walking around in the hotels, they want you to have your mask on. You can only take it off when you're taking your drink or having your breakfast. So I think that attitude, it's beginning to change. And I think on these very congested transport systems, whether airports, trains, buses, I think you will see more people wearing masks to protect themselves.
And I remember William Wright telling me that one of the reasons he started down the road of low emission buses at Wright Bus was because he saw people jogging in cities wearing a mask, which clearly was about the pollution. So it gave people a clue that there was mask wearing, wasn't there, because of people's concern about the air that they were breathing.
Right. So I think electric buses are helping to clean that up. that people don't need to wear a mask outside when they're jogging. But I think in terms of high density areas, people will get used to the habit of wearing masks.
Sure. So the other thing that worried me in the early days of the lockdown across Europe, we were all amazed, weren't we, that the air quality improved dramatically. And what worried me, of course, was that the lobby that is against the fast adoption of low emission vehicles for all sorts of economic cost reasons was an argument that said that nature is so wonderful that it cleans the air up so quickly that you don't need to go as far down the zero emission line as we're attempting to do and do it so quickly because nature can do the job for you. And I was very frightened that would cause countries and cities to take their foot off the gas pedal in terms of going to zero emission. But that doesn't turn out to be true, does it? Because we've got lots of cities around the world saying they're going to use this period as a way of going faster and more deeply into zero emission vehicles. Is that what you've seen as well?
Well, I'm in my apartment building here in Rotterdam. And I remember only a few years ago, I need not to turn on any air conditioning because of the relatively cool temperature here in the Netherlands. But since about 4 weeks ago, I need to keep my air conditioner full blast. Otherwise, I'll cook in my little apartment here in Rotterdam. Don't forget about the climate change. That is happening. That is something that's real. I mean, same thing with London. I remember last year I was in London during the summer. It was incredible. I remember the runway at Heathrow was shut down because it was actually melting. So the climate change is real. All right. So the environmental pollution, well, it's very clear that we demonstrate to ourselves by not running the vehicles, by not flying the planes, the air becomes cleaner. But then again, we still have the temperature problem to contend with. So I think people will not take the pedals off because of the fact that, you know, we are better now for the short duration.
And what can we look forward to? Because we keep reading, don't we, that battery technology is developing ever more quickly. So what's around the corner for us on battery technology?
The magic words will be energy density. And we're keeping our eyes on energy density. We recently launched something called the Blade Battery. By launching the Blade Battery, we are able to minimize the footprint of the battery and increasing the density or the energy output for the same volume. So for example, the same footprint, now you're able to get 50% more energy out of it, which is a blessing. Because on the bus, you want the bus to be carrying people. On the truck, you want the truck to be carrying goods and not the battery itself. So by being able to reduce the footprint and at the same time increasing the energy density, we're getting closer to that, you know, the holy grail of being able to use electric vehicles without thinking about whether it's carrying battery or carrying people or goods. So the Blade Battery is something that we're very proud of. We will be deploying it on our passenger cars first, and later on will be on commercial vehicles as well. The other thing about the Blade Battery, it's the safety. You know, we've seen horrible images of vehicles, passenger cars burning up because of the batteries. Well, this will not be happening with the Blade Battery because of the chemistry, because of the way that's designed. I think the Blade Battery is both energy density, space, and safety.
And what about the end of life for the Blade Battery, Isbrand? Does it have a life after automotive? And what happens to it when it's finally retired?
Well, funny you mentioned that. Coming back from Germany yesterday, I've seen a lot of solar farms. The solar farms are mainly used for the farmers. However, solar energy need to be kept, need to be stored somewhere. So the second life of these batteries are ideally suited for the solar farms. So they can be tapped into and storing the energy that's harnessed during the daytime and then to be deployed in the evening. So there is definitely a second life. And I just mentioned one of them. A cellular towers for your mobile phone, they are also backed up by batteries. So that's another fine example. As the population of mobile phones are increasing, we need to have these cell towers properly backed up. So these are just two examples, the farms and the telecom industries.
And so BYD, I mean, has always led in terms of battery technology, hasn't it? From the early history, providing batteries for smaller devices, then you moved into automotive in a big way, and you'll continue to expand in that. Clearly, BYD is absolutely determined that battery electric technology is the future. But you've seen the recent run to try and promote hydrogen. What's your views on hydrogen?
Well, there are different propulsion energies available. We think that the future of the bus industry, in the transport industry, is to develop environmentally friendly and new energy vehicles, especially battery-powered vehicles, because they are here, they're ready. It's simple. Okay, electric storage makes electric mobility a very compelling proposition for public transportation, because we don't need the complications of the transportation, of the safety, the pressurization, or the other handling requirements for gases that you mentioned earlier. We think that, you know, gas, hydrogen, for example, it is a solution, but I think for the short term and the quick solution, especially for the last mile transport, for city transport, battery is the immediate solution right now.
So if you could predict where we're going to be in 2025, say, just looking across at freight and logistics, last mile delivery, looking at bus and coach, what's your prediction? I know predictions are very difficult just now, but looking back, where do you think we'll be?
I don't know. This is a very difficult question, isn't it? I mean, given COVID and the recent re-emerging of shutting down of cities right now, the new normal is definitely very different. I think people will come out. People will come back out and enjoy restaurants or theaters and whatnot. They'll be a little bit more apprehensive about public transportation, and therefore what Frank said earlier about, you know, providing the space, the new technology to combat whatever virus it might be out there. But also at the same time, I think it will help people to understand that electric mobility, it's very important. We have just launched our SUV in the Nordic area in Oslo. And I think people, we're looking at, if people are changing their cars, they might be jumping into electric passenger cars sooner than we were expecting because of this, what they have seen in the last 3 months about the clean air and whatnot. So I think the prediction is that people are planning to buy cars rather than internal combustion. They will move into electric BEVs. I think the PTA and PTO will have to go through a period of readjustments in the next 6 to 12 months. Some of the tenders are slowing down. The funding are being diverted for other purposes. But at the end of the day, the PTA and PTOs, they still need to transport people. And that will come back. Companies will continue developing new generation of buses, lighter buses, more comfortable buses, more advanced and transparent vehicles. I think I'm giving myself away a little bit here, so that people feel that roominess, the airiness while they're in the bus. I think this is what I see right now as far as transportation goes. I think the last mile delivery, I think the government will be pushing for more zero emission last mile delivery solution from the different forwarding company. I mean, just look at the last few months, Leon, you and I, we have purchased probably more than a few times online. And that stuff need to be delivered to us.
He's coming here every day.
Every day, exactly. And therefore, that last mile transportation is extremely important. So I think this is what I see. Electrification, BEVs, mobility, they all come back.
Frank, what's your view in UK looking back onto 2020?
Yeah, so I think, Leon, for me, it's perhaps more a generalised point. And I think what I see in the years to come, that the fundamental thing we need to achieve. So I think what we're going to see is mandated clean air zones, mandated types of transportation and heat and energy provision. And I think what's going to be really positive is if we as society, as our governments, can make sure that the environments we live in are healthier. Now, I think if we do that, the market can then decide how that's provided. And whether it's battery or hydrogen, you know, market manufacturers, we will innovate to ensure we provide the right solution for the right problem. But I think if we have a starting point of a healthy environment, it's an irony for me that before COVID, the numbers around deaths through poor air quality are significantly higher than those that have died through COVID-19. And I think that's a really interesting thing, because air quality is as much a killer in our environments and societies as any virus. So I think what will reemerge out of this, I hope, is that we all live in a cleaner, healthier place.
Well, that's really very interesting. Both of you have said that although we've only had this virus for a few months, and it has sadly caused the deaths of too many people and made suffering for so many more, but for years before that, poor air quality has been killing people and has been shortening their lives and giving them terrible, terrible illnesses. So the future is not only that public transport volumes will return to normal, but that you'll be working very hard to use the very latest battery electric technology to deliver clean air in our towns and cities. And that is something that'll be needed long after this virus is just a terrible memory. This has been Lunch with Leon. My guests, Isbrand Ho and Frank Thorpe from BYD. This is a Binswood Media production. You can find out more about it at itthub.net. Please do write in and let us know what you think, what you'd like us to talk about, and who we could talk with. So for now, thank you very much indeed for joining us, and I hope to see you and hear from you for the next podcast.